Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today I am very excited about today's guest. But before I introduce her, I'm going to tell you about my book launch. It's actually my third book. The second one's not out yet, but the third book will be launched next Tuesday, March 14th on Amazon. So I'm just letting y'all know that on March 14th, you can go to Amazon. It'll be an ebook and it'll be a special promotional price of 99 cents. And so what we're doing is trying to have as many people, there it is, have as many people buy it on that day as possible. So there will be a clickable link on that day. So you go to Real Talk on Amazon by Hillary Arno Burns. And then, well, I'll tell you more about it later. So thank you very much for that PDF. And now I'll introduce my very special guest, Marty Smith. I met Marty in a book camp, I think it was last July, and Marty and I were both writing a book. I was writing my second book in the book camp. I didn't even think I was going to write a book, but there it was to be written. So there I was in the book camp, and there was Marty, and we met. And I've been dying to hear her story. I mean, the first question I'm going to ask her is, how did you end up in a wheelchair when you were a child? But before she tells us, Marty Smith, well, I'll give you her information later. Let's just get her out here so we could start talking. So welcome, Marty. Oh, and Marty's book was just out, but you know what? We're going to let Marty show you the book and tell you about the book as well. But first, we're going to talk about her childhood. So, Marty, I know you were born in Columbia, South Carolina.
South America. First of all,
South America. I know. I saw SA and I'm like, no, it must be South Carolina. Okay, wow. So she was born in South America. All right. So you tell your story. I know you learned English and all that, but how the heck did you end up in a wheelchair when you were a child?
Well, I was actually already grown up as an adult. I was in my early or late 30s. In the mid 30s, I ended up in a wheelchair.
Okay. So not as a child. Okay. All right. So tell us first about your childhood so we can appreciate where you've come from.
Okay. I was born in Columbia, South America, and I moved at 5 years old to the United States. At 6 years old, I was back in South America. At 7, I was in Venezuela. At 8, and I've moved a total of 49 times in my lifetime.
So 49 times. Moved 49 times.
Yes.
Wow. How old are you? Is that like once a year?
63 and a half. Yes, on average it was once a year, but I got married and I settled down. Literally.
So all those moves, right. You've been settled for lots of years. So you did those 49 moves probably...
18 years, my first 18 years of school.
And wow.
Growing up, I didn't have a steady relationship with anybody because as soon as I met someone, we always moved in the middle of a school year, which was really traumatic for a person that didn't know what culture they were in, what language to speak. I was supposed to have Spanish as my native tongue. However, English seemed to take over my whole being, and I kind of, Spanish was by the wayside to the point where I didn't even want to speak Spanish because English, I could defend myself better in English. But of course I was ashamed to the family. How could I forget my native tongue? And the whole time I've been struggling with, I don't know where I'm at. I don't know how to speak. I don't know what the culture is. So I'm just going to wing it. And at 7 years old, I heard from my mom that I had not been planned, that I was a mistake. So already I was, well, what am I supposed to do? But I now looking back and all that, yes, it was very traumatic, and that's not something that you want to hear in your formative years. However, I see that that was the little driving force in me to prove to myself and the world that I was worthy, that I was not a mistake, that I would definitely prove somewhere down the line that I was meant to be.
Wow.
And
Now,
that's
okay.
how it all started.
Now you have, I know you just lost your brother. Did you have other siblings as well? Like,
Yes, I'm the only girl, and I have two siblings, but I lost my brother in January of last year. This year will be a year, and then my father-in-law passed away in December of last year. So that was
right.
double whammy during a very difficult time.
Right. Okay. So, and that was a year ago. Okay. Now back to your kids. And then, I'm sorry about your loss, but when you were, why did were you a mistake if you were a girl?
Well, I guess
Did you ever ask her?
no, and I couldn't question anything because that was considered disrespectful. So what parents said, authority, very strict household, you never questioned anything. You just kind of accepted the orders as they were dished out to you. But the fact that I had been raised in the United States part of the time, I also saw a difference in the way people expressed themselves and just the culture of family in general. In South America, we were very aristocratic. You had to ring a bell to get a glass of water. But of
Wow.
course, I learned the American way, you go serve yourself. So I would be hanging out in the kitchen pouring my glass of water, and I'd get yelled at, "Hey, where's the little bell that you ring for the servant to come bring you a glass of water?" I said, "I'm not thirsty." But these people that were to me were giving me the TLC I needed to have to show that there was love out there in the world, and just because I didn't receive it from my immediate family didn't mean that I wasn't going to learn it from somewhere down the line. And I did, and I thank God for putting all those little angels along my way, because I could have been a very ugly human being given all the hardships I had gone through. But somehow or another, he kept placing those right people. And my grandmother also, we always go visit to renew the visa or whatever in between moves, and I would always feel like I wanted to be adopted by her. In fact, I wanted to be adopted by any family that would pay attention to me. And I was like, I had my resume since I was little. I can wash dishes, I can iron, I can cook, I can clean, and I'm very polite, and I will keep my clothes all properly ironed, everything. It was too funny for me, but
All right. So what? All
when I
right.
saw
So
the
let me
tattoo
just
on my
go
back.
back. Okay. So now in I just the aristocratic thing is in my mind. So were you guys rich or was that just the way it was there? Like
Well,
what did your father do?
my dad was an electrical engineer, but there is no middle class, or there was no middle class in South America when I was growing up. So you're either well off or poor, and the poor people were the servants. But to me, those people made more sense emotionally to me than the aristocrats. So I got to
So,
sort of, yeah.
yeah, now with your mom. So your dad, I know you said was traveling, and I think you're going to tell us why you had to move all the time a little bit later, but what about your mom? Why was she not so warm?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't answer you. I just know that both my siblings, my brothers were the favorite ones. They could do no wrong, saints, you know. But then again, in South America, men do dominate the culture, and they're highly spoken of, even though it may not be accurate. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It was something cultural, I think, more than anything,
Okay.
or maybe something else that I never found out about.
Well, no, I mean, there's this funny thing on I don't know where my sister found it, and it was this girl talking about her mom and her brother and saying, "Oh, no, come in. No, you don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. I'll do that for you. Oh, no, sit down, sit down. Please relax. You work so hard, right?" And then she's like, and then when it's me, she's like, this is what my mother says to me. "You look fat in that."
Yeah,
And
well,
it's like, It's so true. So I don't think it's just South America. I mean, my brothers, they're like the kings when they come. And for us, it's like, put that away. Do this, and you're like, well,
You have to turn
it's
into
just.
that doting self, like they are, oh no, stop the presses. You got to drop everything you're doing, retend to their. And I'm like, but you showed me how to do it on my own and they can learn it too. So I was a rebel without a cause and I didn't care, but that was what made me persevere and persistent and resilient. So I'm good
Right. Okay.
with that.
All right. So that takes you. So you're going back and forth, America. You learn to speak English, which is amazing. Back and forth. And do you wanna? What else do you want to say about that? Do you want to say why you
Well,
had to move?
yes, and I didn't learn about this till very recently. My dad had witnessed an assassination from my great uncle, and I had no idea that he was even a political figure. He was getting ready to run for president, my great uncle, and dad was present when they shot him down. So that was very traumatizing to him. My dad left Columbia when he was 18 years old and went to the University of Illinois. And he never, never, and I kept saying, why isn't dad always, when we go to Columbia, why isn't he, doesn't he visit us? And he never wanted to show up because he had developed a paranoia thinking that they were chasing after him because of his last name and everything else. So it was really sad that my dad lived on the run in his own little world that, paranoia took over, and he couldn't stay still long enough for us to settle without thinking that someone had already discovered he was there. So I realize now how hard it must have been for him, and he never spoke about it. So that was something he, immersed in his soul and never got brought out. But I did discover that there's a museum for my grand uncle. He's an activist for injustice. And I believe I inherited a lot of that in me.
Wow. Now, how did you find out about
My
this?
a cousin of the family told me, and I was like, "Oh wow,
So
no
you
one,
had no idea. Wow.
no." And
Now, do
I
you know if they actually were after him, or was he just afraid they were?
think it was fear. I think it was fear because this happened, what, 30 plus years ago, and. No. It was in 19, I want to say 1960, somewhere in there, or 50. Something.
So that's like 60 years. Wow.
It's a
So you were
long
a baby.
history. I wasn't born when it happened. I wasn't born.
Oh, wow.
He'd just gotten married, so it was bad. But after that, I just learned to be super flexible, always a quick study with culture. If they were speaking Spanish, I knew I had to go to Spanish mode. If they were speaking English, I needed English. If I was with the maids, no, I can't, mingle with them, but I would anyway. And then if we didn't have maids in the United States, I would look for the bell, but there was no bell. So I had mass confusion, but I always say, why am I getting the short end of this deal? And I went to 18 different schools. And always moved in the middle of the school year, which didn't allow friendships or long-term relationships, nothing. So I felt like learning was my friend. If as long as I was studying, and I had a really good GPA. I mean, it was a 4.0 all the way through until I went to college, and then it dropped to a 3.96. But I've always been enjoying learning because I felt like I was getting meeting goals and proving to myself I could learn something without anybody saying, no, you're no good at that.
So do you
So,
think that was part of proving that you were worthy? Like still proving that you weren't a mistake? Do you think that's what that was all about? I mean, obviously
absolutely.
it didn't hurt you to get a 4.0, but do you think that was all?
Well, I also heard when, like, a spelling test, even though I had an A average, a spelling test, I get a 98, and the first thing that came out of my parents, what did you get wrong? And when I graduated college with a 3.96, it's like, how come you didn't make valedictorian? And I'm like, I made it. But granted, I was in a wheelchair. I was under heavy medications while I was going to the medical university in Charleston. and I had an entourage of people that helped me carry books and everything. I had the best friends in the world because I had parking privileges in Charleston, South Carolina.
Wait, wait,
Because
wait, 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 wait. You can't just switch to wheelchair without. Here we are going back and forth. Your father's running, and all of a sudden you're in a wheelchair. Okay. All right. So you got great grades. Where did you go to college? In over there or here?
Here at Medical University of South Carolina.
Oh,
And
that's an undergrad. Okay. Okay. So medical university, are you in the wheelchair yet?
yes, I had already been re-injured when I graduated
Okay,
the
well,
college.
what do you mean re-injured? We didn't cover the first one yet. So how did
Oh.
you do? So you're going along getting good grades, all of a sudden you're in a wheelchair. We got to go back. I got to follow this.
Okay. I got hurt when my first in our early marriage. I got hurt in a nuclear shutdown. Okay. I
Wait,
slipped.
wait, 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 wait.
This is a wild
No,
story. I don't mind.
wait. Because so you went to college later.
Yes. As an adult, I was
So
already
you
a
didn't go
grown.
from high school to college. Okay, that's why.
I wanted to, and in fact, I had a scholarship, a Rhode Island School of Design scholarship, a Fulbright scholarship, but my parents did not allow me to go because we lived in New York and there was no way I was going to commute to Rhode Island. The school said, we'll give you another scholarship so you can go downtown New York. No, you're not riding the train. It's dangerous, this, that, and the other. So I lost that scholarship
Oh my
and
God.
I was going to find my independence and I joined the Air Force. In high school, I saw the recruiter come in and I was window shopping for what was the prettiest uniform. At first I said Marine Corps and then I saw the people that were the recruits and I was like, let me go with the Air Force. I like flying. I like Blue Yonder. I'm going with that. And I joined the Air Force and I signed the contract. I had been left back a year in school in kindergarten because I didn't know Spanish. So that was to my benefit. The recruiters are there for the high school graduate wanting to sell the recruitment. And I said, ooh, can I sign? Yes. I didn't need permission from my parents. And yes, I was very daring, very bold, but I did it. And it was the best decision I had ever made in my entire life. Because to me, basic training was a cakewalk compared to living with my family. The strictness and everything else surpassed what they do in the Air Force. But I was like, wow, this is fun. I was like the I don't know, the mascot and the cheerleader of the squadron. Everybody was crying and homesick and I was like, oh no, this is nice. This because I was feeling independent.
And what
And
did your parents say? What did your parents
oh
say?
my dad, we lived in New York and my dad said, we're moving. You're not going in the Air Force. I said, oh dad, that's a federal offense. If I
Crime.
don't go, I'm going to be AWOL and you're going to jail for keeping me away from this. And we moved in from New York to Florida. And I was like, I'm still going. Somehow or another, my resourcefulness came along with me. And I had met a friend in New York whose mama was my godmother, and she said, I'll pay for your ticket. You just pay me when you get back at it, when you start getting a job and you can pay me back. And I said, okay. So I had that airplane ticket. I hid it in the car. Nobody knew about it except me, but I was going to go in the Air Force. And in Florida,
Where were you flying to join?
to New York, but we moved to West Palm Beach, Florida.
Oh, so you had to get back to New York. Okay, wow. And
Okay.
then, yeah.
We get there and dad wants to have me be engaged to a guy in December. My delayed entry program was in January. So I was like, oh, that's a nice ring. I didn't love the guy. I didn't want to be married. And I just kind of went with the flow to keep it on the hush that I was going to leave. And then I told the fiance, hey, by the way, I'm leaving. He said, no, you're not. And he told my dad, and then they tried to stop me from going at West Palm Beach. And I said, that's when I declared the law, the federal law offense, and they had to let me go or they were going to go to jail. So I got on the plane, went to New York, went off on to the basic training and loved it. It to me, it was a vacation. It was a vacation from all the strict upbringing I had had. But it did well for me because it made me very independent, and I just got resourceful, and I was always going to prove to somebody that I could do these things, you know? And then I went for leave to base from basic training home, and I had fallen in love with a guy in the Air Force, and I was engaged to him. Oh, my parents didn't want that either. So the guy said, well, he knew the history of my family and how they didn't like me. He says, well, choose between them or me. And I was like, oh no, I got me another winner here. So I said, that's not going to happen. Why? Because my mom called me and said, your father's dying. He had peritonitis. And she wanted to, that was her ruse to get me back to Florida out of the Air Force. And I said, mom, I got work and la la la. But I ended up going because one thing I learned was how to feel guilty my whole life. Okay. So I went. When I got there, my dad was eating a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken by the pool, and I wanted to kill. I wanted to
So he
kill.
wasn't dying?
He had had peritonitis, but it hadn't happened when I was happened to be giving up my fiance and everything else. But it was good. It was good because I ended up going to school while I was in Florida.
So you didn't go back to the Air Force?
No, I had already gotten out of the Air Force, and I
Oh,
was
okay.
living in Arizona. I was stationed in Arizona. I was living there, and I was going to get married, but then this happened, and I got out. Why did I get out? I didn't get out because of the relationship. I got out because women were not treated equally in the Air Force when I went through in late 70s. And I had been a flight line mechanic, clean cabin pressurization, liquid oxygen, life support system of A-10 aircraft. I loved what I did. I got to sit in the airplane cockpit and do all this clean, fun stuff with little valves and all this stuff. And the base commander switched hands and he said, we don't want women on the flight. And I was like, oh no, I signed a 4-year contract to be an environmental control systems mechanic and I'm going to be. Well, they argued with me. I got hurt on a weekend duty. Then I had to get Senator DeConcini in Arizona to back me up. I got my honorable discharge, but I would have made an Air Force a career. Had I not made it a career, or had I made it a career, I would have never met the guy that I'm married to now for 40 years. Because I stayed in Florida, and when I wanted to get ahead there, my parents said, we're moving. And I like, God, oh, we're moving to Cary, North Carolina. I said, I don't want to live in no hick town. I don't want to grow up with cows and farms and all that, because all I knew was Barney Fife and Mayberry. So I was like, no, I'm going to stay here. And then they wouldn't let me, so I had to go. But they did me a favor because I had 3 jobs, full-time jobs. I mean, the best thing that I could do was work, so I didn't have to show up and get yelled at. Okay. So now I had a little edge on that independence. I met my husband in a bowling alley. He
In
was
Florida or North Carolina?
in North Carolina. He was
Oh,
good.
okay.
He was waiting on some buddies. They never showed up. Then, he asked me for my phone number, and that was it. He lost my phone number. I didn't know anything about it. But then I had applied for a job at the nuclear plant. That nuclear plant, I said, wow, I'm hallucinating. I must be seeing this guy that I met in the bowling alley. It ended up being him. He took his hard hat off. He goes, what are you doing here? I said, no, what are you doing here? He said, I worked at NuHil. Yes, but you didn't say Sharon Harris nuclear power plant. And then my father-in-law shows up in all this because I was running around the whole construction of this nuclear plant and everybody knew me. I was one of the few women out there. And my father-in-law was a very polite, very well senior, just he was cool. And he would give me a butterscotch candy and everybody else cat calling and named and hey, mamacita, yeah, you know, and I'm like, I had already had that practice with the Air Force, so I'm like, okay. And I met this man. I come to find out that would be my future father-in-law. And he told me when I So I'm my husband at the nuclear plant. He says, I lost your number. I say, oh, don't give me that lame excuse, lost my number. My father-in-law showed me the piece of paper where he had washed the jeans and part of my name was there. And I was like, oh. So we met, my husband and I met in May. We got engaged in August and got following the following February, not even 11 months. And we've been married 40 years, February 12th of this year. So I am blessed to have had him and found him in my life. And he's the one that kept me going while I was sick, while I was down, while I was in a wheelchair. He said, go back to school, baby. You're smart. You got all
okay,
the
wait, 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 wait. We still didn't find out how you got in the wheelchair.
Well, that's what I'm going to tell you. When he sent me to school, my husband said, why don't you go back to college? I said, I'm older than most professors. I had excuses for everything. And I said, okay. And then in the first 2 year college in Columbia, South Carolina, I met my mentor. And she said, you have it in you to be a radiation therapist. And I said, huh? What is that? I didn't know what she was talking about. She said, you've worked in a nuclear plant. You know math real well. You love patient care. You've been a patient with all these surgeries, and I'll tell you what the surgeries involve. And I did. She wrote a letter of recommendation. There was like 30 people applying for the college, and there's only 10 in the program. I was one of the 10. So I was blessed. Wow. And I moved to Charleston, South Carolina. There I started.
With your husband?
With my husband. Yeah. We were already married.
Right. You know what? I'm going to keep us all in suspense about the wheelchair, and we're going to go to a commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to hear how it happened. He's really teasing this along, folks.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? If not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule time with Hillary today.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
I always have to say that's my daughter's voice and that's her company.
Nice.
It just makes me go, Hillary! Okay. All right. To you. So, all right. Okay. So let's see. You're married. You went to Columbia, South Carolina. Uh-huh. You're now in college.
Got my 2 years down for bachelor's in science and got accepted into a medical university. Everything was hunky-dory. I got my 3.96 GPA, graduated, and I thought, I'm the only sibling out of the three. This is my chance to win my parents over. They went to graduation, but they're like, why didn't you get valedictorian? So I was like, I give up. It's never going to happen. Don't worry about it. Just keep going, Marty. Just keep going. And my husband acknowledged, baby, you don't have to prove anything to anybody. You're good at what you do. I said, okay. Well, in that third year of college, I was at the medical university. I had an injury at the nuclear plant that I worked at, but it has been delayed on what I was going to do with my leg because what I did was tear my ACL. That was like walking on a bad chassis. And then I ended up...
While you were working, you heard it?
Yes, I re-injured it. I had already heard it in Columbia, but I re-injured it in South Carolina, Charleston. And when I re-injured it, I slipped. I went to go eat lunch, and I slipped on the floor. They didn't rope it off with the little bucket thing. Mm-hmm. And I re-tore my knee, but I also had a nerve condition show up. And I didn't know what was happening because I thought I was going to die. It was a nerve condition. It's called reflex sympathetic dystrophy or chronic regional pain syndrome. When you hit your elbow and you're just fried in pain, well, that happened to half of my body. And they said, stop being a wuss. It's workman's comp. Don't milk this. This. I was like, I'm not milking it. I wouldn't have milked it. I wouldn't have gotten a college degree if I didn't feel like I was going to be productive in society. If I wanted to sit at home and watch soap operas and soap, and
right.
I would have done it. But no. So they finally got me the right medical attention. And in that process, somewhere between all of that, I had like numerous surgeries on my ankles. I've injured and re-injured both my ankles, both my knees, my back, and all kinds of. So I've had a total of 26 surgeries. This is why I jump all over the place, because it's like, to me, it just happened. Back then when it was happening, it was a nightmare. It was a disaster. I was heavily post-traumatic stress disorder occurred during two of the surgeries because I woke up during surgery. My resistance to anesthesia was awful. So I am one of those cases that the doctors say, oh, come look at this. You're never going to see it again. And I'm like, oh, lucky me. I'm special that way. So
finally, so how did you hurt everything just from that one?
Yeah, the nerves, what happened to the nerves is like a short circuit in your autonomic nervous system, your fight or flight system. And then you don't, your reflexes are all whack. And you end up atrophying your muscles to the point that you can't walk. That's why I was in the wheelchair. That's why I was in the wheelchair. So this doctor finally sent me to a knee guru. The knee guru says you have reflex sympathetic dystrophy. They identified everything I had. They said you have a choice. You can go in a coma. We can put you in a coma to help you with this condition. And I'm like, no. Yeah. Or we can put an implant in you. And that implant is like a Medtronic pacemaker. It's going to be wired down your vertebral column. And your brainstem is going to say, no, I'm not hurting. And you're going to be able to walk again. And I was like, okay, let's go with that route. I don't want to be in a coma. I ended up doing, but I had to have numerous psychological tests because some people like to pull the wires once they're in there. And this was just starting when I was going through all this. This was just starting to be a process to do this condition, to take care of the condition. Well, I got my spine stimulator. It's called a Medtronic spine stimulator. And now, since then, I've had it for numerous years. I've had numerous surgeries because the condition traveled on one side of my body to the other side. And I kid about it now because I said at one point in time I was mono sound, then I became stereo, then quadraphonic, and now I'm sensorround because the spine stimulator has been removed. At first it got put in my cheek, in my butt, inside it's implanted. And I say, oh, I have bun of titanium. I beat Jane Fonda, bun of steel. So my humor was my defense mechanism. And then that the doctor says we're going to have to rewire it and put it somewhere else. So I finally got the condition under control. I started getting able to stand up for a long period of time. But I had a cane still and two knee braces. I was still very rusty in the process. But I was feeling like, wow, I'm out of this wheelchair. I'm going to be. And I remember declaring to God, the movie Mel Gibson had put out with The Passion. I watched that movie. Something hit me in a major way. And I said, God, wherever you want me, however you want me, I am yours. And I had a reconversion because I was raised Catholic, but to me, it was just a title. I wasn't seeing the practice of it. And I became a catechist. And I think this is God's way of also giving me children because we weren't able to have children. I wanted to adopt, but since I was on so many medications, they said, you're a liability. We can't. So I said, I want children. Somehow or another, I want children. And God gave me those children. And I have had those children since I knew them since they were 8 years old. Now they're married. They have their children. And so it's like, the best of both worlds, because I'm enjoying other people's children's without the responsibility of having to deal with the whole package. But
so how does the catechism relate to the children. Were you a teacher?
Yes,
you were
I was
teaching.
Teaching,
oh, okay.
Teaching,
okay.
Teaching them the faith, but I was
wow.
teaching. I was teaching myself the faith because for the first time, all that woke up in me. I was like, "Wow, now I get it. Why didn't they tell me this way?" And I could relate to the kids not asking all these questions, and I would answer them. And I was very inquisitive, but nobody ever answered my questions. And I was like, "Oh, wow, this is just the coolest thing in the world." But I didn't know any of this was happening till way after the fact. I just now have realized all this. And in that process, we moved from Charleston back to where we met, where my husband and I met, back to Cary, North Carolina. The farmland was not a farmland anymore. It's Research Triangle Park, and all kinds of international jet setter corporations are here now. But it's amazing to see in 40 years how this place has developed and how I have transformed myself in the process. Okay, fast forward, the pandemic comes. And I was getting over the disaster that I wasn't able to work because I had re-injured myself in the hospital. I were able to work. I was taking too many medications.
Wait. I thought you like had these things put in and you were fine.
Yeah, I could walk and everything, but the medications that they were giving me to tailor the nerve condition were very liable in a hospital environment. So they said,
okay.
we can't, I only worked 1 year as a radiation therapist, but in learning how these cancer patients get treated, I learned how to live. So I take all these lessons, all these opportunities that showed up, and what it was my mindset was now starting to see things in a different perspective, but I didn't quite have it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pandemic hit, we're shut in. I said, I don't want to have a flashback of being in a wheelchair, being unable to do anything. I'm not going that route. I started seeing all these courses online. The book camp came out, and I was like, oh, wow. And I did a few other courses, and I was like, I got to change my mindset. If I let go of all that emotional luggage, if I let go of all the things that have been bearing on me, on my soul and killing my spirit, I'll be okay. And somehow or another, that's what happened. I went to the book camp and I started seeing that that writing the book was not that impossible, you know? And all of a sudden things started coming out of me. I said, what is the main topic of everything that I've been? I ended up doing a YouTube channel in Spanish, which I went back to my native tongue. And I started speaking in Spanish, and people were like, oh, we didn't know you spoke Spanish. I said, yeah, I do. And I also got a job at the church as a Hispanic ministry coordinator. So I was starting to see the duality that God was doubly blessing me with two languages. And somehow or another, I was going to find my way through the whole sordid mess. And I did. And then I started writing the book in English. But then I said, ooh, most of the people want it in Spanish. So now I'm doing the translation as well. But to me, writing this book has been a catharsis. It has been a healing process, because in observing all these times when I had been faced with adversity with my family, how I was treated, how I was abused, or whatever you want to call it, I saw that God was teaching me to be resilient. He was teaching me to have hope. He was teaching me to be resourceful. Examine what I was about instead of worrying what everybody else felt I was, you know? So I discovered what grows in me is to help people, to share messages of hope. And that's where the book is just like, boom, it just got handed to me by the hand of God, because I didn't think I had it in me to be a literary anything. So it was.
Wow. That's amazing that you just happened to find the book camp. And then, do you have your book? Do you want to show it?
Sure. Here it is right here. Called Resilience.
Wait, okay.
Resilience.
Resilience. Yeah, that's good. Leave it right there. Resilience nourishes the soul. How overcoming life's speed bumps can help you bounce back and thrive. Wow.
And
beautiful, beautiful cover too.
The picture, the background picture is me, but the book cover guy did the front with a weed growing out of the concrete, which makes everything possible. So
wow.
That's how I feel like I've been rebirthed, and at 63 and a half, I thought when I was in the wheelchair and everything, I said, I'm just going to find a motorized wheelchair that climbs mountains. And I had the whole plan of how I was going to overcome this wheelchair thing. Little did I know, after the second year of the pandemic, I became a personal trainer. I lost 70 pounds, 70 inches, and I decided to become a personal trainer. And then I was like, wow, God has given me the ability to renew my mind, body, soul, and spirit. And it's just been, I kind of pinch myself and don't believe half of what I'm going through because it's such a contrast compared to how my life had been.
Now, how did you lose the 70 pounds?
I bought this nutritional system, which I wanted to increase globally, and I joined this networking that took me to Spain, and then I started seeing that that's where my background was. It's like all these little pieces of the crossword puzzle or the puzzle that God had put in me he was handing me all the pieces to put my life together. And it's just really cool because I've met some wonderful people. And that's how I got the YouTube channels. That's how I found all these other things that have just complemented everything that I'm doing in the right way. And like God is, I say God gave me a GPS and the God, possible solutions is what he gave me. He just threw them out there and I got rid of all that emotional clutter that was blinding me and not seeing what I was worth. And in that process, I started discovering my gifts, my talents, my treasures. People started pulling stuff out of me I didn't know I have, just like the book camp and everything else. So it's just a realization that it starts with us, and no one tells you that. It starts with taking a look at you and seeing that you have the full potential to be everything you want to be. You just don't know how. And you have to find your way in that life process of doing it. So it's really, really interesting.
So when, I mean, do you think it was, I mean, because you went from, 70 pounds, 70 inches in a wheelchair, what do you think was the moment? Do you think it was the pandemic when you just said, I'm not going to be stuck here? You think that was it? Because that's incredible.
My faith, and somehow or another, I started developing, when I started losing a little bit of weight, especially given all my history with all these surgeries, that I was in good shape until I got hurt, and I was a yo-yo. I would lose, I would gain, I would lose, I would gain, and I was like, ah, I'm always going to be fat. And I got over 200 pounds, and I was like, hey, and my health started declining. I had high cholesterol, high blood pressure, every borderline, anything I could be, I was. But by the grace of God, I got off of all the medications. When I lost the weight, I started getting more energy. I was eating right. I was finding that drive in me to continue somewhere, somehow I was going to make it through all this mess. And I did. And I'm just grateful that I hung in there because I can't believe what all the doors and all the windows that have opened in the process.
Wow. And what was that system that you...
Oh, isogenic, isogenic.
Isogenic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, wow. And then I, after the personal trainer, I was like, I'm going to write a book. I'm a personal trainer. I started giving English classes to people that spoke Spanish and Spanish classes to people that spoke English. And I was starting to see all these things that God had handed me. It's like, I can make use of this. And life isn't the way it used to be that you have to go work for a company and retire. Mm-hmm. You're going to find your way. You're going to find your way. Just hang in there. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. And now, I'm the energizer bunny now.
So how did you become a personal trainer? You just like went and got trained to do it? I mean, that's amazing. From wheelchair to personal trainer, right?
Yeah. I got the courses online and then my husband let me practice on him. And the next thing you know, I'm going to the gym and I'm getting customers to get trained, especially older people. And I was like, wow, this is nice because after a while, I say when I reach 50, I was like, oh, my life is done. I'm done. It's not going to happen. This girl had it. But I will tell you that my husband has been married 40 years. Says I don't have the, I'm a lot more spry now than I was when I was reverse got married. And I'm like, wow. So this is, It's unbelievably rejuvenating to feel this way, but also I know it was God blessing me and rewarding me for having done all this stuff. Now, about my parents, we were fine in Charleston, South Carolina, and that's where we ended up living for 18 years, and to me that was home. But then I got a call from a perfect stranger, and they tell me, you might want to come to Terry, your dad is in the hospital. And I said, who are you and why is my mother not calling me? I ended up coming, and in the process, for the first time in my life, I felt my father loved me. He had a heart attack that took him to the hospital, but he had three while he was in there. And I didn't go home when I came to see him. I went to the hospital and stayed with him for 3 months. Because of my medical training, I started diagnosing him as having some kind of like a forgetfulness. And I asked the neurologist to take a look at him. He had advanced stages of Alzheimer's. And my mom didn't have a clue, but she was also suffering from dementia. So I come and stay with him for 3 months in the hospital. That's where I found out my cousin tell me about my granduncle being political, this, that, and the other. It's just like, well, all these little pieces get getting put together. But I left. I went back to Charleston. And then I got a call from my mother. We need your help. I said, what's going on now? She says, I have cancer. Breast cancer. And I'm like, wow, God was teaching me how to deal with breast cancer, becoming a radiation therapist. I came back home. We ended up moving from my beautiful paradise in Charleston. We lived on an island, James Island. And I said, okay, well, paradise is over with. I got to go because I couldn't live with the guilt. I got to go take care of them. My brothers were both here, but neither one of them attending to them. And I say, well, I have nothing to fear but fear itself. I'm going for it. My husband said, you won't be able to live with the guilt if you stay and ignore it. And I said, okay. So I came. We ended up selling our dream home because my husband had taught me how to be a carpenter. And we did all the interior woodwork and everything in the house. It was a beautiful home, but we had to sell it in the worst market, 2009. And then everything. After that, we came here. Mom needed a roof. The house was invaded with all kinds of issues, and it had toxic mold. We discovered toxic mold. So I'm like, well, and I know that that was a test to see if I really had this perseverance, this resilience, this test of fortitude to get through it. And I promise you, it was not easy. I don't know how I didn't lose my husband. I don't know how we didn't lose the house. Mom was in foreclosure. We ended up rescuing him out of foreclosure. But for the first time in my life, I felt like Mom was starting to maybe acknowledge a little bit of my worth, or a little bit. And then when my dad passed away, but Mom had the dementia. And she ripped up the powers of attorney for him to be taken care of. So the state was the one that took care of my dad, taking all my privileges away to handle his finances. They ended up putting him in group homes. He ended up getting abused. And I was always on alert, going at different times, random order, when to show up. I kept having him move closer. They kept moving him further away from the house because they figured he's not going to show if he's way out in the boondocks. I kept going out there and busting them every time. And then they finally moved them back to Cary, North Carolina for their 59th wedding anniversary. I didn't know because the guardian didn't tell me. I took my dad. Well, I kidnapped. Supposedly, I kidnapped my dad. I didn't know I was kidnapping him. A friend of mine, we took him to the church. And the priest had this little party for him and everything. That was the last time my dad had a party. He passed, this was in September, July, he passed away in September. And so this whole time I knew that my dad was something special because he would always smile. And I had learned all these things about music being attractive to patients and all. And dad would react and he'd get happy and he said, come on, leave that woman. He was mad at my mom. They were not getting along because mom couldn't believe he couldn't figure out to put on his pants or anything else. So It was really comical, but at the same time enlightening to see that God was taking me through all this to see what I could handle. And he passed away, and then Mom started getting worried about the state taking over for her. And by the grace of God, I was given the power back to be able to care for her. I promised my dad on his deathbed, she's not going to get what you got, Dad. She's not going to get abused. She's going to die at home. Sure enough, she passed away at home. And that isn't redeeming yourself for everything. I don't know what it is, but I'm grateful for the experience. I just wish people would know that it doesn't have to get to this extreme to learn how precious and special the miracles we are, how special we can be with each other. We just see past all our indifferences. And that's my message, my mission now, to bring hope to those that want to give up, to those that feel like they've reached the end of their life in a bad way. No, it's never too late. It's never too late to pick back up, dust off, and keep going and find your way. Find your way.
Wow. Thank you, Marty. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Well, thank you for your, you know, for being who you are, for not giving up. I mean, so many times you could have and you didn't. And look at you now, personal trainer, 70 pounds lighter, out of the wheelchair, writing books. You know, I know you have so many other things that you're doing too. So I want you to know you can find Marty on Amazon. Resilience Nourishes the Soul and resiliencenourishesthesoul.com, right?
Correct. Yes.
And she will be at martysmith.com soon, right? Correct. That's being developed. Yes. And is there anything you want to say in closing, Marty? This was incredible.
I just want to know that everybody needs to just stop once in a while and take a look at themselves. Stop blaming the world. Stop blaming your parents. Stop blaming your environment. We're all capable of overcoming a lot of things if we have faith in ourselves, if we believe in some force bigger than us, because nobody created all the miracles that are out there. That is nobody. I mean, it's something, it's just a power greater that rules this universe. And we just have to admit it, that we are not alone, that we're capable, and we can, and we will, and we overcome if we try. And I just want to share the book so that people learn the tips and secrets of how I became so resilient in the 63 and a half years of my life.
Thank you. Thank you, Marty. This has been incredible.
Thank you.
And again, Resilience Nourishes the Soul is Marty Smith. And don't forget my book launch, March 14th. Go on Amazon and get there it is, Real Talk by Hillary Arno Burns. You can put that in the search, and let's get this book out there, because it's also a way of helping people create lives they love by getting real, talking about what they're afraid to talk about, and getting free. So that's going to be an awesome and very quick read. But there, you can also, at some point, it's in development, go to realtalkwithhillary.com as well, but not yet. So anyway, thank you, Marty. This has been awesome. And
thank you for having me.
So inspirational.
It's a privilege to be in this position in this day and age to be able to help someone find their way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you're entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.